Good afternoon, friends. This is Carolyn Evers. Just delighted to be back here, you touching me, me touching you. And because we have so many new listeners, I would just like to recap a tad bit as to what we're about here on this particular show. This show involves healing. My co-host, Caroline Allen, is a lady who goes into the theta state, works with God, sees into the body, and works on that healing aspect. As for myself, I work with the Universal Akashic Records that's in the center of the cosmos. I work with a group energy. They call themselves the Cherubim, and they hold all of the records for not only Earth, but for the cosmos. And when God calls upon those records, they turn them over to God. So with that in mind, I'd like to introduce to you Caroline.
Hi, how are you all today?
And I would also like to mention to those who are listening and who might want to call in that our 800, our number to call into the show is 877-876-5227. Now, Caroline, we had a little conversation yesterday about food and spinach in particular. And
I wonder why.
Well, you know, when you hear about people eating Popeye's food and then they're dying, you kind of want to think about that a little bit. And I've done a little bit of searching on the internet. Some of the reporters are going out to the fields and seeing what they can see to see how things are harvested, how it's packed. And, of course, scientists right now don't have any idea as to what's happening with this spinach other than people are getting E. coli in their system. And we've had a death and we've had a lot of sick people. And so I wanted to bring to the audience, Caroline, a little bit about bacteria, how you see it in the body, and perhaps talk about what it's like when it becomes systemic. And one of the things that E. coli in particular is doing is shutting down the liver. So, first of all, I know that sounds like a big agenda, Caroline. But
oh, thank you. Would you like that in 25 words or less also, Carol?
See, I just believe in how wonderful you are.
I think that was probably 15 questions rolled up into one.
Well, you know how I work, darling.
Yes, too.
Okay, let's talk about what we were talking about yesterday, about spinach growing in the field and what the farmer's doing to it.
Okay, one of the things that I've seen here in the county that I live in is that the farmers order up this liquid manure, which is basically nitrogen, I guess, and they spray it on the vegetable to use as a fertilizer. Well, one of the problems that I have with that is that there's a lot of bacteria in manure. And I've had a couple of farmers here say to me when I have objected to that, they say, oh, well, we've been using it for years. And I'm like, yes, but there's a difference between putting it in the ground and spraying it on the vegetables. That way it becomes much more difficult to really cleanse the vegetables and be sure that they are clean. You know, I mean, there are several different ways of doing that, but do you really know if that method of washing that they've done in packaging plants or what you can do in your own kitchen is actually going to remove something like E. coli? And this form of it is particularly dangerous because it gets into your bloodstream and does tend to shut down some of the organs. So, you know, that's, I have some real serious questions about the, I will admit, about the health our health in terms of trusting our food sources.
Well, I would agree with that. However, it's kind of hard for people to have their little plot and grow their own vegetables. So for most of us, we kind of have to work within within the system and what we might, you know, what we might do about that. Then there's another thing when you're talking about the liquid manure. You know, some of it might not, just be sitting on the outer leaves, but it might be absorbed into the plant itself.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And so it might be, you know, actually inside of the plant, you know, just like we get toxins in our bodies, the plants also pick up toxins inside of their bodies, and you're eating those toxins if you're eating something that's been sprayed with manure. I have some serious questions about that, and I don't know a particular answer to that question.
Well, we'll talk a little bit about that, dear. When you see bacteria in the body, well, let's talk with the bloodstream. What does it look like?
Well, it kind of depends on the bacteria that's in your bloodstream. Each one of them has a different shape, a different form. They look, some of them look like kind of like little worms. Some of them look like little centipedes, or some of them look like, some of them are, they're just different shapes, and they have all of these little, what would look sort of to the naked eye almost like little, hundreds of little feet on them. They're actually little filaments that help them move around and help them take in food themselves. But some of the forms of the bacteria that I see are really parasitic. They really are going to go in looking for an area in the body where they can eat and reproduce.
Gee, that's kind of a scary thought, isn't it?
I know. That's not a very pretty picture, is it?
No, it's not. But
and some of them actually ooze. They just ooze these toxins or these fluids that sort of hide them in them, like it's sort of like in a cloud, and that also bear toxins which can damage the body. So it's not a pretty picture.
Now, I've heard this word systemic when the, for all intents and purposes, the bacteria or I think virus also. Isn't that accurate to say that a virus will do this also, go throughout the entire bloodstream?
Oh, absolutely.
So we have virus and we have bacteria. Have you looked into a body and seen when that condition has become systemic?
Yes, I have.
And so I don't know if I want to answer this question, but I'm going to anyway, because maybe there's people out there that want to know this too. It just sounds to me like it's the overgrowth of the bacteria, and then it becomes everywhere. Is that pretty much the way it looks?
Yeah, I guess that would be a good way to put it. I hadn't thought about saying it exactly like that. But it does. I've seen it in the lungs, particularly where the bacteria and the liquid that the bacteria actually ooze out can fill up the whole lung, basically, and you know, the lung can't get any air. It can't do what it needs to do to take the air in to get the oxygen to the body and send it out in the bloodstream. And not to mention the fact that, you know, if both lungs got filled up, you would drown and all that stuff.
Wow.
That's in there. So you have a whole shutdown of the system by which you get a lot of the oxygen that's in your body. Of course, there's also oxygen that goes in through the pores of your skin, but you know, that's where we think about the breathing and the production of oxygen as it moves out into the bloodstream, into the capillaries, and then into the blood, the main bloodstream from there. But it can be very fast developing. It can be slow developing. I've seen some that have been there for a long time, just kind of hanging out slowly.
You mean they're not real activated?
No, it's almost like they have their own little intelligence there, and they kind of know that if they hang out and they don't cause any damage, that the body itself may decide that it's okay for it to be there, so nobody pays any attention to it anymore.
You know, that's an interesting point that you bring up, Caroline, and perhaps something that we don't really think about. We think of the body being whole and complete, and how we can communicate with the cells and so forth, but never really think about the fact that in addition to the intelligence inside of the body, that these bacteria and viruses have intelligence also. That's kind of interesting. Never thought about that before.
They do, and I have actually seen, for instance, the herpes virus.
Uh-huh.
If you even say the word or think it, they scatter in all directions and start hiding in the body.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. You know you're coming to look for them. And they're just like, I'm out of here.
To come back and play again.
Exactly. They go back and they don't really go dormant as much as it is. It's kind of like when you play hide and seek.
Yes.
When you're a child and one child finds a really great place and nobody can find that child.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, you know, that child peeks his head out from behind there to see what's going on.
Done that myself many times.
Right. Well, that's kind of what that herpes virus kind of does. It'll just get down deep and feel like it's hiding, and then all of a sudden it'll stick its little head out. You go, ah, there you are.
And one of the things that's happening with this outbreak with the spinach and in the death in particular, it was an older person whose immune system had been compromised and there was liver failure. And I would guess by that, I don't know if you'd agree with this or not, Caroline, the liver being one of those organs that is responsible for cleaning the blood, probably got overwhelmed with the job. Would you say that seems reasonable?
Mm-hmm. That seems like a reasonable part of what happened anyway. The bacteria and viruses in particular, can actually attach to the cells. And the way they attach to the cell can kill the cell, and the cell itself will die.
Mm-hmm.
So that can also happen, that not only is the liver working very hard to cleanse from your system anything that's foreign, but if something gets in there that attaches to the cell, it can kill the cell, so that you've got a two-pronged sort of attack there. And one of the things that I find is not uncommon now is to have a virus piggyback on the back of a bacteria.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's an interesting, you know, you've talked to me about that before. That's interesting. Perhaps you can go into that and develop that a little more.
Well, what basically happens, that it works two ways, as far as I see it. You can have a virus piggybacked on a bacteria, or you can have a bacteria piggybacked on a virus, so that when you go in and you find a bacteria that has multiplied to the point that it's become a problem for the body,
mm-hmm.
You may sometimes have to go in and remove the virus first, because it hasn't actually activated. It's kind of like it's waiting for the bacteria to do its damage, and then it's going to go in and do it, the damage that it needs to do, or, you know, is programmed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you have to remove one of them first and then go after the other one in the second place. And everything is created by sound. So in order to remove viruses from the body, what I do is ask God for the opposite tone of the virus. And he gives me the opposite tone of the virus, and I sound that tone, and that tone actually will kill the virus. That will not work as well with bacteria. You just need to actually damage the cell walls of the bacteria, and then they will not be able to live.
I'm so glad you brought that up, Caroline. You're reading my mind, dear. Because I've worked with Caroline where she has done that tone, and it is just so fascinating. Caroline works on the telephone, and I've called her and said, "Oh, Caroline, we got a problem here." And there have been times when she has given that tone, and the way it feels to you, I can't describe it other than you can. Well, I can only speak for myself. Other than I have felt that spiritual component come through of what is actually happening. At least that was the effect on me when you do that tune, Caroline. It's like you actually feel the hand of God working in your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's awesome that you feel that, Carol. Some people don't feel anything at all going on when you... when I sound the tones, but I see what's going on. I see that it is destroying the bacteria or the virus. They can't live because it's that complete opposite tone. So it's really interesting for me to see it and for somebody to actually feel the way it does. And that's what happened the first time I did it when I was working on myself. I actually felt the tone throughout the cells of my body, and it was really pretty incredible to know that tone is reaching down to all the cells and is doing that clearing on the virus so that you no longer carry that virus.
Well, what's so exciting about that, Caroline? When I read people's records and they come for a reading, and the cherubim talk about the different forces that were available to God when he created the souls, one of them was sound and intent. And
yeah.
So, you know, this is running through, I believe it's probably running all through creation. You're calling it a tone. Yes, a sound. You know, I think much of creation is involved in sound. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. And there are many, many sounds and many tones. So I may not, and I rarely say to God, what's the name of this virus or what's the name of this bacteria? You know, when I'm working on a situation like that, I just say, give me the opposite tone of this virus. I don't. And it may be really high. It may be really low. It may be in the middle. It may break. I never know how it's going to sound when it comes out, when I make the sound itself. But, you know, I think sound is healing in many different ways, and that's certainly one of them.
Mm-hmm. Caroline, what I want to do is just give a little reminder to our listeners out there. Come join in on the fun. Don't let us have all the fun. Come with your questions. And if you want a healing from Caroline or you want something from the cherubim, give us a call, 877-876-5227. We've taken our time out to be here today to join in love and be of service to all of you who hear our voice. And so, Caroline, we were talking about sound, which is just so beautiful. I had a, when I went in and read the records, I had a vision one time of souls being created, and I heard that sound.
Oh, how beautiful.
Oh, it was. It was so gorgeous, and it's nothing that I can duplicate, but to see the colors and hear the tunes when the sounds when the souls were created and God's intent bringing forth each one of those souls into creation, it was indeed beautiful. This whole concept of creation and how God works with all of us. I think what I want to say here is we're not alone. God
definitely.
Is there.
Huh? Definitely not alone.
Yes. And so I get, you know, emails from people from readings who feel that they're alone. And you and I work with Source and with these energies, and we certainly know that we're not alone. But it's one of those things that I want to send out to everyone that hears this. They're not alone. There's hope. Have faith. Find a way to connect because, you know, sometimes this can be a lonely place if you're not consciously aware and feel connected and know that you are here and have a vast orchestration behind you. So,
yeah, exactly. You know, and those angels, guides, and masters that we all work with really can't work with us or for us unless we ask them to. And once we ask them to, they get busy and really can do their jobs and enjoy doing their work. And otherwise, they're kind of bored. Like, okay.
We have some more to discuss about this, Caroline, but while we're talking about this, it reminded me of another conversation that we had, and we've actually talked about this on the show, but I really think it bears repeating. And that was when hey, when you have these little conversations with God, do you have tea or coffee or cookies, or is this just an outright conversation with no food? Do you sit on a stool?
I love it. You know, God's everywhere, and you can have a conversation with him anytime you choose. It's never been a matter of whether God would have a conversation with you or not. It's up to us to say, I'm ready to have a conversation with God. Most of the time we just talk to him or fuss at him or whatever and don't choose to sit and be quiet and listen. I usually go into meditation and I just have water because I drink a lot of water anytime I'm doing any kind of meditative work, and that includes the healing work. And I just usually, sometimes I don't have an agenda, but sometimes I do have something that I'm working on with a particular client that I want more information about. And so I'll just say my prayer and then say, you know, I really need to ask some questions and get some answers on a couple of subjects here. And, you know, God usually just nods and says, okay, what do you want to know?
You know? I just love it.
And sometimes he says to me, it's taken you an entire week to find enough time to sit down and ask me these questions. I'm like, I didn't realize that. I'm sorry.
You told me a beautiful story when you asked God about miracles and how healing takes place, and he told you to do a little bit of research on Jesus. I just love that story. Do you care to repeat that right now? I think everyone needs to hear it, and if they've heard it, it would do them good to hear it again.
Well, actually, what I was seeing how fast the healing takes place. I mean, it takes place in nanoseconds. It's God's just so quick to do the healing work. And so I was, you know, I started thinking about it. And so I sat down one afternoon, one Sunday morning probably, because that's when I really take time off and have 2 or 3 hours of prayer and meditation time. And I said, okay, God, why do you need me? I mean, you're doing the work. The healing's taking place. I see it happening. Why do you need me? And he said, go get your Bible, the one that has the concordance in it, and look up every place where Jesus healed. And see what all of those things had in common. And I said, okay. So I got
up. You don't argue with God, do you?
No, I don't. So I got up and I got the Bible and I opened it up and I went and read every one of the passages where Jesus had healed. And in all cases, except for Lazarus, it was the same two or three things that were in common for all of those. So, okay, so I go back and I sit down again in my lotus position with my candle. I said, okay, I've now read the New Testament, and what I found was that in every case where Jesus healed, there were witnesses, and he said, absolutely. There were always witnesses. There always has to be a witness to the healing. And I said, why does there have to be a witness to the healing? And he said, it's the same principle, basically, as the question of if a tree falls in the forest and nobody is around to hear it, does it make a sound? He said, if there's not a witness in your dimension to the healing taking place in your dimension, then it hasn't been accomplished. And I went, oh, okay, so that's fine. So I'm the witness to the healing. He said, yes, and you witness not just by seeing, but by the fact that you repeat to the client what you see happening.
Mm.
And so they then, particularly if they can see themselves or they can imagine what is going on, they become the witness to their own healing, and you are also the witness to the healing. So it takes place, and it holds on that dimension because that's where it took place. And I said, okay. And he said, what else? And I said, well, in every instance, Jesus either asked or seemed to know whether the person believed. He would say, do you believe?
Mm.
And if the person said yes, then the healing took place immediately. So there has to be... there doesn't have to be a belief in a particular system, because that's not really important to God, as far as I can tell anyway, because he certainly heals anybody who calls and asks for a healing. Because when people call me and ask for a healing, they are pretty... 85 to 90% of them believe that God can heal them and will heal them, and all they have to do is ask. And that's basically the sort of the foundation for the healing working. Now, sometimes people call me because somebody told them to, or because somebody's badgered them into it. And in that case, you really have to make sure that they believe that God can heal them, and they believe that God will heal them, and they're asking for it themselves, not just because somebody else has told them to call me up.
Well, while we're talking about that, Caroline, since we haven't had somebody call here and ask for a healing, why don't you give your telephone number out in case they're a little hesitant getting on the phone. They can call you direct and ask for the healing.
Okay. My phone number is 540-586-2401. I do live on the East Coast, and I work from 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time until 4 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, or daylight time, whichever it happens to be. I also work until 5 o'clock, but I pretty much reserve 4 to 5 o'clock for emergency situations. And by that, I don't mean a bashed-in toe that you just... You know, people have different ideas of emergencies.
Indeed, they do. Just ask 911.
Exactly. Sometimes you're kind of like, and you think this is really an emergency? You know, there are people who have real emergencies and who really need to talk right this very minute. So I usually try to reserve that time for somebody because I'm usually booked pretty much all day. And, you know, if somebody does have an emergency situation and they can't get through to me, they might be really upset or frustrated. So from 4 to 5, I answer any emergency calls, and that way I can respond to those people on a more timely basis. Because sometimes when you call me, you know, I'm working a couple weeks out, so it will take a while before you can get an appointment. And my appointments, initially, if it's somebody who calls for the first time, may be anywhere from an hour to 2 hours. It really depends on what's going on with the individual person as to how long it will last. And I do have people who have chronic problems, and those problems take longer to heal. Healing a friend of mine who is a Shinto priest told me one time that healing is sometimes like peeling an onion, and you have to take each layer off one layer at a time until you get down to the core issue, and then, you know, you can say that somebody's really, truly been completely healed of whatever it is. And sometimes it happens in an instant, so I never know whether when people call me, you know, how long it's going to take, or whether they're going to need to call me back, or what. I'll get that information from God as we go along.
You made an interesting statement, Caroline, and I kind of wanted to explore this a little bit. Some of the core issues that people might have that cause disease. What are some of them that you have seen that's causing physical symptoms?
Carolyn, the list just goes on and on.
Let's
and
just
on.
Try one. I'm easy.
Well,
we know we got a long list.
And, I mean, okay, they're... Core issues are things like I hate myself, or everybody else hates me, or I'm in constant fear. There are core issues like that that you really have to work all the way back down to find why they hate themselves. You know, is it something from this lifetime or another lifetime, or... is it something they done in this or another lifetime. Those, and they're also sometimes core belief systems that keep illnesses in, that cause them, and that keep, that hold them in the body, like carrying a lot of guilt about everything. Yeah, I sometimes I'm just kind of blown away by.
You name it, they got it.
They are guilty about everything.
Right.
You know, and you're just like, hold on here a minute. You know, who pronounced all this guilt on you, and how, who's convinced you that you're, you need to carry all of this, these guilty feelings around? This is, to me, this is really not love, and God is love. He doesn't perceive us as guilty of doing something wrong or doing something that we shouldn't do. He perceives us as having all of the experiences that we came here to have, whether they are good, bad, or indifferent. We experience those things, and we choose to look at them as opportunities rather than crisis, and to find out how we can grow from them. And
I have found the same sort of information with the readings that I've done for people too. And one I found interesting is depression.
Yeah.
And an individual had been, and I thought this was kind of fascinating, that when a person is here on this, in this dimension, we have a lot of things that we're working with, opposition, even some of the dark forces. We try to attain something, and for whatever reason, we haven't done it. And the, and as you say, spirit looks at this as the experience or the gathering of this experience. And then the soul dies, goes into the other side, and they don't have those forces there. They have love there. And they look down on their lifetime as they go through their own records, and they are looking at, oh, we didn't accomplish this. Set up a mission, come down, and they have forgotten their memory. Their memory has been erased, and they only know that they have the shortcoming that they haven't done this before. And after a couple lifetimes, if this happens, they start developing, or they can develop, not necessarily, can develop being depressed.
Yeah.
And it's these kind of issues that you've got to go back and help the person unwind. It
mm-hmm.
can become a very complicated thing. But what is so beautiful, Caroline, is people like you and the readings that I'm doing can pinpoint these things, and you work with them, and you can eliminate them or work through them.
Right. And you can also change some of those memories via the method of helping them understand why they were here to experience a certain thing, and to say, you know, you've accomplished that. You've experienced that. It was actually a successful lifetime in the sense that you experienced what you needed to experience in that life, and you've grown from that. You don't need to go back and do it again.
I like what you're saying, Caroline. It reminds me of something that is a little bit different from that, actually changing an event in the past, which I know you do also. Actually changing the event as if it didn't
right.
happen.
Exactly.
Can you touch on that a little bit?
Sure. Sometimes I was trying to think of an exact, for instance, to give you about that. I did have a young woman that I worked on who was very concerned because she could not get pregnant, and yet she was very fearful of being pregnant. And it turned out when we went back into some of her lifetimes, in one lifetime, because of the disgrace of not being married and finding herself pregnant, she had basically killed the baby when it was born and disposed of it. And she had this tremendous just sadness and guilt and the whole thing of how this all played out. So basically what the angel did was take her back and have her love that baby and hold that baby in her arms and then hand the baby to the angel.
Oh.
And so from being something that she had done that was very harmful to her psyche and to the baby's psyche, she, that whole memory was changed into one where she held the baby and she loved it, and then she handed it to the angel so they could take it. And so it was beautiful. It was a beautiful situation and a very different way to handle that situation. So you change that experience. You take that memory, that bad memory out, and put in a loving memory. And so you then have a whole different situation where you can actually, and she did get pregnant and have a baby then.
Are you working with the DNA when you're doing this, do you think?
Mm-hmm. I work with the DNA very often. I work in the morphogenetic field, which includes the past and the present and the future, too. And you could, you know, you can talk about that as being in the DNA.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they're... lots of levels to that.
I've never seen that, Caroline. What is that like when you're talking about this field of the past, present, and future? What in the world does that look like?
Wow. I've never thought about describing it to anybody.
Of course, you know I'm going to ask you a question.
I know that I haven't thought of even describing to myself, much
and
less
I'm
to somebody
sorry
else.
If
thank
I do
you,
this.
Carolyn.
I used to drive my teachers crazy, Caroline. You can imagine that.
I know. Sometimes when I've been in a seminar with you, you've driven me crazy, too. I'm like, would you please shut up so we can go on with the lesson?
See, only a friend can say that.
I know, exactly. But it's time for somebody else to ask a question. When you're in the morphogenetic field, you can go back into somebody's past lifetimes, and it looks like sort of like a stream of consciousness. That's the only way I know to describe it.
Okay.
Going backwards. So you can move through different lifetimes and pinpoint one that has something to do with. And usually when I do this, I'll say to God, take me to where this fear started. Take me back to where the fear started so that I can go in there and we can see what needs to be done. And then zip, that lifetime comes up. Others will just go streaming past, like the stars when you watch the beginning of Star Wars. They just go streaming past and they don't stop for you to focus on them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but then when the words start coming towards you with the Star Wars movie, you focus on the words, and that it's kind of like when this lifetime sort of starts slowing down, you focus on that lifetime and what was going on in that particular part of that lifetime that was causing a problem. And the same thing with the future, it's going forward like in a stream of consciousness. And in that case, there's not, and I think sometimes people misunderstand this, but it's not like there's just one possible future. there are many possible futures. And based on where a person is in this moment, then with the choices they're making in this moment, you'll see the stream that goes out from the decisions they're making now. And I've always felt that the point of prophecy is not to be accurate. The point of prophecy is that you are accurate because you're telling somebody something that based on their behavior in this time period and their choices, this is what's going to be the result. It's kind of like seeing the consequences. And if you don't like the consequences, then change what you're doing. Change your action and move in a different direction, and you won't have that consequence.
Archangel Michael talks about this as the doorway from possibility to probability. I kind of like that.
Oh, I like that too.
Yeah.
And how does he put it?
That there is, we're on like a stream of events. And just like you say, there are possibilities. And then there becomes a doorway where it sort of like narrows out, where we then bring these possibilities into probabilities, and it's like manifesting them. And I see this from what he said. I see this as this little doorway as being that element where the electrons come in and then manifest what possibility that we were walking upon. And it is at that doorway, if it's an event of magnitude where it maybe involves a country or countries, if
mm-hmm.
there is a group of people that apply their thought at that doorway, how it can change the event from being a probability then back in the other direction. And I find this just so fascinating because we humans think of ourselves sometimes, I don't mean everybody, but I mean sometimes you get the thought that things are impossible and you can't change it. But in this world, in that dimensional world of thought, of quantum physics, we are the master and we don't always realize it. We're the creator.
Yes, we are. We're the co-creator with God.
Well, yes, co-creator.
Yeah.
That better said.
Yeah, and I see it as also as a circle in the sense that how God's shown it to me is that what you put out into the universe comes back to you. So if what you're putting out into the universe is hatred or judgment, that's what's going to come back to you. If what instead you're putting out to the universe as a co-creation with God is love and hope and faith and light, that's what's going to come back to you. And you are creating that within that circle that goes out in the universe. You're creating this beautiful lotus blossom instead of something that's looks like it's been dragged in the mud.
Yes. Now, I've seen this sometimes. We're talking about the past lives. I've seen it sometimes as an elevator. I think we
uh-huh.
see these things in a picture that we can accept.
Right.
And I've seen it. Now, my son who is in spirit, has shown me different lifetimes. And he said to me one time, he wanted to show me his favorite lifetime, and I just loved it. It was like I was
oh.
on this elevator with him,
oh,
and
cool.
it stopped. It was cool, and we got off, and there were all these characters. We were all dressed in the costume of the day, and I could watch what we were doing. It was fascinating.
Oh, neat.
Yes.
Oh, how great that is.
Well, it really is.
Yeah. Well, I do think there's no doubt in my mind at all about God showing things to you the way that you can
process
perceive
it.
And mm-hmm. process it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I ask him to show me the peptides in the body. I see shelves of all of these little glass bottles with chemicals in them.
I love it.
And some of them are filled to the brim. Some of them are half full. Some of them are almost empty. And I just say to him, pull out the ones that are not processing correctly. So that those slide out in front of the other ones.
Oh, and like then, magic.
Yeah, and then, you know, so, I mean, that's not the way they appear in the body, obviously. And I don't say, because there are way over 250 of them, I don't say, you know, what is this one, what is that one, what is the other one. I just go, oh, wow, okay. What can we do here? You know? These?
Maybe that's why I'm not a healer in the manner that you are, because I would have been asking what that was.
What's this one? What's that one? What's that one? You know, I really want things to work.
Yes.
I want things to work for people, their bodies to work, their minds to work, their spiritual being to work, their emotions to be healthy. So what I choose to do is not necessarily get into a whole lot of the detail about what this really looks like in the body as much as what about any of these really needs to be changed. What is it that you can do to change these, to fix them, to make this body work more and more in a better working order? So I don't, you know, I've noticed that they're all slightly different color, but I don't know whether that's because I'm so aware of color,
mm-hmm.
and so
maybe
my perception of this one being a little bit more brown, this one being a little bit more yellow, blah, 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 is that because of the fact that I perceive color the way I do.
Caroline,
but,
I'm not sure I know what a peptide is.
Well, actually, it's a hormone, it's an enzyme, all of those different fluids that are produced in your body that affect digestion, that affect how your thyroid system works, that produces the feeling of well-being in the brain, all of those, they're neuropeptides, which, you know, science used to think were only produced in the brain, and that's not really true. A wonderful book that I read by Candace Pert is called Molecules of Emotion, and it really explained to me much in much greater detail and what the scientists, the biologists are now calling peptides. It's almost any of those fluids that are in your body that are your hormones that are affecting your, you know, how much hair you grow and all that sort of stuff.
You know, when you think about the body in these kinds of terms, it's amazing.
It's, yes.
When you look inside and you see how complicated it is, mm-hmm. and then you look on the outside and you see this magnificent creation in harmony and balance and what it produces.
It is. It's amazing. Just amazing. And it's amazing to be, I have to admit that my work brings me so much joy because God lets me see things on so many different levels. It's not just on the physical body level, but you know, in all of the different levels of the body. And it's just awesome to see how it's all put together.
It is a marvel, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It is.
Boy, they had to be up, the creator gods had to be up thinking quite a few nights before they put this thing together. I mean, they must have had a big drawing board up there.
Yes, they did, figuring it all out. And you know, I was talking to you about this yesterday, and I wondered if you'd had any more thought about it, but, you know, I was working on somebody's thyroid and found that the immune system was attacking the thyroid peptides, and so I went up to the Divine Blueprint level to check to make sure that the immune system was working correctly and the thyroid was working correctly. I couldn't find the immune system.
Caroline, this is a topic that I really want to get into on the other side of the hour because we're coming. This I really think is important, and we're coming up to a little break time for us.
Okay,
and
good.
For those, you got a little chance now to drink some of your water, dear.
Thank you.
we're coming up to the hour. Want to have a break, and I also, while you guys are out there thinking about all these wonderful things we've been talking about, give us a call, 877-876-5227. We would like for you to join in on the fun. Just give us our observations and what you think on these topics if you wish. If you want to call in and talk to Caroline because you have a particular concern that you're looking for a healing, do that. And Caroline, if people are kind of hesitant about talking to you on the telephone, give them your home phone number, please.
Okay. My home phone number is 540-586-2401.
And
thank you for calling Carolyn and I.
And
both of us.
Right. And if you want to know a little bit from the cherubim for a reading, you can call in here. We'll give you some ideas. Or you can contact me at www.akashic.reading.com. And we'll pick you up on the other side of the hour, friends. Does our producer have us on break?
I don't know. I haven't heard him.
I think he left the studio with Elvis. He's out there following Elvis, I think.
Maybe he is.
Come back on that Elvis break and give us a break.
Exactly. Maybe he decided we were having too much fun. Didn't need a break.
Apparently. He's in Never Everland.
Yeah. Well, Carolyn, tell me about your cruise that you're going to go.
Oh, great. Yes. This. Thank you for mentioning that. Archangel Michael asked, gave me, we'll start with Archangel Michael and my relationship with him. He gave me a book that we call Earth History, Past, Present, and Future, and started a conclave at Archangel Michael's conclave. And people join, and he is teaching them. And what is so fascinating about that and what he is teaching is working with the electron. And why that is so fascinating is because as we go into the higher dimensions, there is more space between the electrons, and this is a lesson to assist us in with ascension. And so he asked us to have a cruise because he's going to join us. He's bringing Mother Mary. He is also bringing Mary Magdalene and her angels. And we are going to be working with the electron, doing lessons very similar to what we're doing with the conclave. And for those who come with an open heart, Mary Magdalene and her angels, and of course Mother Mary, they are working with that to open up the heart for ascension, and also working with, as I said, the electrons, because there is a correlation between the cells in the body, the emotional system, and the compassion that one needs to hold in their heart. And what a setting. We're going to be leaving in California in March, getting on one of a great cruise lines whose food is incredible, and we'll be having these classes in the morning, and we're going to be having all kinds of really interesting presenters in the afternoon while we're cruising, and we're going to be going to the Mexican Riviera. And I've done this trip on Norwegian, and I have to tell you, the cruise line is great. The scenery is marvelous. You can get off the ship at the different stops, have a little bit of mariachi music, a little bit of cerveza, play around a cough, and hopefully the whales will still be there. And my golly, what more could a person want? Archangel Michael, connection to the spiritual hierarchy, good food, fun, companionship. So,
oh, that sounds awesome.
It is awesome. So I would recommend that anybody who, you know, if this appeals, go to the BBS radio, and there is so much information. See, we'll forgive our producer being out with Elvis and not giving us a break because he's done this marvelous story for us on the website. And there's the blog and all kinds of information. And so we'll just forgive him this time for dancing with Elvis.
Okay.
Well, Caroline, did you enjoy the break, darling?
Yes, I did.
Got your water there, huh?
Yes, I do.
All right.
Now, I do want to ask you one question. For those of us who are techno peasants.
For those of you who are what?
Techno peasants.
A techno peasant?
That's what I am.
What's a techno peasant?
Well, I'm definitely technologically challenged. That's a longer way to put it, but I've always said I'm a techno peasant. For those of us who don't really do a whole lot on the computer, is there a phone number that you can call to get more information about the cruise sent to you?
Send me an email at carolyn@archangelmichaelsconclave.com. And leave your phone number. I'll call you and give you all the details. So there actually are more people out there than you who are techno peasants. you think you've got somebody out there who's your cousin or something?
I know there are a lot of us out there.
Okay, you techno peasants. Send me your name and your telephone number, and I'll call you back and give you all the scoop.
Okay.
I don't know, Caroline. I don't think there's any more techno peasants out there except you.
Oh, yes, there is. I talked to one yesterday.
Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm. I did. I was talking to a man about my cell phone, which is entirely too complex. I said, do you have a cell phone for a first grader? I want just a phone. I don't want it to grind pepper. I don't want it to talk to me. I don't care if it has pictures. I said, I want one that I can just make a plain phone call on. I don't want all this other stuff.
Isn't it amazing how they're combining all this stuff?
Oh, I that may be fine for people who are really into all that stuff, but I'm not. Just give me a phone, please.
I think you're a Luddite, darling. You're not a techno peasant.
I'm a what?
Luddite. That was back during the Industrial Revolution, and all these new inventions were coming in, and there was a group of people who protested against that.
Oh, really?
They wanted the old way. They didn't want these newfangled contraptions.
Oh, yeah.
So you're a Luddite, darling.
Maybe that's it. Maybe I need to go back and change that lifetime.
Well, there are people who really believe this way. They want the simple life. Mm-hmm. They don't want their telephone to grind pepper.
I know.
I love it. Well, we're not going to grind pepper on this show.
Okay.
We're going to try and keep things simple.
Sounds now, like a good plan to me.
Yeah, since our since the guy at all of the buttons and bangles and beads didn't give us a break, we're going to go on to the second half.
Okay.
Of this. And Caroline, you were talking a little bit before we went on break about was this the immune system you were talking about?
Yes.
Why don't you start there, and let's see where it leads us.
Okay, that's fine. Well, my daughter called me up, and she found this, and she said, would you please, she does the same kind of work I do. She said, would you go in and see if you can find the immune system? I can't find it. And I said, okay. So I did, and I couldn't find an immune system in the Divine Blueprint. And she
Before
said,
you get there, can you tell a little bit about what the Divine Blueprint is?
Okay. When God created us, he created us with sound and purpose and intent and color and all of those beautiful attributes that he uses to create with. And he created us via a divine blueprint. And that blueprint actually is, for each one of us, souls, is something that's in existence, and it will show, to me, when I look at it, it looks very much like the figure of the body that you see that's all lines, vertical and horizontal lines, that will rotate around. There's a computer program where the body revolves and it, you know, it's lines. It looks very much like that to me, and it will move around. It'll walk. It'll sit
now,
down.
I've seen that. I know what you're talking about. I didn't know that Bud Light knew about that.
Well, there are a few things I've seen on the internet. Not much. But that's what it looks like. And it's like electrically lit.
Is it blue?
Yes. It is blue. And it's electrically lit. And if there's something on it that's red, that's flashing red, that means that's going to be a problem. And it's a problem in the Divine Blueprint. And so if it's in the Divine Blueprint, rather than working on a DNA level, you go to the Divine Blueprint and work on that level. Now, there are lines coming down, energy lines, that come down to a working blueprint, which looks more like, and maybe it did this for me because I was an interior designer before I went into this, I see a working blueprint as a blueprint of a house almost, except it's the body and it has pages, and it shows the outline, and you can see places where it connects from the divine blueprint down to the working blueprint. And so if you see a flashing light in the divine blueprint, that same light's going to be flashing in the working blueprint, and then you go down to the body, and you'll see that there's a problem in that same location in the body. So the first time God showed me that, I was just fascinated by, you know, all these different blueprints I needed to look at to see where you actually started the healing. And he was showing me basically that with some people, for instance, they may have had, and this was the case with me, I had this chronic pain in my back on the left-hand side between my vertebra, my backbone, and my kidney, and up a little bit, and I just seemed to have it all the time. And I just couldn't figure out why I would have it. You know, it didn't manifest itself constantly, but I couldn't seem to get rid of it. So I was working on it very seriously one day, and he showed me that I had to go up to the Divine Blueprint, and there it was in my Divine Blueprint. And I was like, now, how did that get there? And then he showed me the working blueprint, and he said, now you have to correct it in the Divine Blueprint and go follow the stream down, make sure all the lines have electricity or have lights going down from the Divine Blueprint to the working blueprint. And then when you get to the working blueprint, go down to the body. Well, I saw some lines going up from the body. I said, well, what's this line going up from the body? He said, you've had a wound in that area in several lifetimes, so you've taught the Divine Blueprint that there's a problem there. So you need to take that line out that goes up from the body to the Divine Blueprint and make sure that you put in a clear line that goes straight down there.
Wow, that's cool.
Well, that I did that, and that was the end of that pain. It was gone.
While we're talking about that, and I don't mean to take you off the other topic about the immune system, because I'm trying to understand the blueprint. I know if I have a question, other people might have a question.
I'm sure.
If they do, call in. 877-876-5227. Unless our guy is still out with Elvis. Is it fair to say that these different levels of blueprint, from the Divine Blueprint to the working blueprint to our body, is it fair to say that what this is a pattern coming down through the dimensions?
Yes. It is.
I sort of had that feeling that is what was happening. And so is it fair to say that the Divine Blueprint is coming from our Oversoul?
I want to ask you a question. How do you define the Oversoul?
I would define the Oversoul as that poor, you know, that's a good question, because how can you answer something unless you know what the other person has in mind? You're absolutely right. Oh, God, smart.
And he's always said, and how does she define the Oversoul? I just love it.
Okay. I would define the Oversoul as you're right. Words are very difficult.
They are.
A group of souls tracing back to perhaps the very early beginning before it's, well, this is what I'm thinking. We have a soul in the very beginning that was created, and that, then to come down through the dimensions, it had to divide. And so there was a cluster of souls where the beginning of this dividing occurred, and that is what I am perceiving as the Oversoul. And maybe there are others in sacred literature that is not explaining it that way. But since we have somebody that can lead us in the direction of what this is, perhaps we can get a little explanation as to where this original blueprint for the physical manifestation came from. Is that a better way of putting it?
Yeah. It really basically came when God made the choice to create us. That's where the Divine Blueprint comes in. He created us originally as souls or spirits, however, whatever word you want to use. And then when he decided that we would manifest in the physical sense of the word, that's when the Divine Blueprint came in.
So God as I would consider God, the source in the center of the cosmos, is that, are we talking about source now?
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that. So source decided that we would manifest the physical, and source created the divine blueprint at that point. Do I have my facts right?
Yes.
Okay. So source has created the divine blueprint, and the soul then has gone down through dimensions until, is this fair enough to say, we get to a dimension we're going to manifest this physical body. And since we're here on Earth, perhaps we need to say the Earth. But I suspect that before we manifested the body in the hard physical components, there was another place where this pattern went through. And I suspect that that pattern went through what I might consider our higher mind, that group of all intelligence that we have gathered in all of our journeys. Is that a fair statement to make? That is where the next dividing point is.
In terms of...
It seems like we have three dividing points where this blueprint comes from. The divine blueprint, starting with source, then it comes down into the dimensions, comes down to another place, which seems to me that is our higher part of our soul, not this thinking entity that we have manifested on this level. And then it has to come down to what we're actually manifesting on this level. That second level has to be in the etheric realm. We haven't manifested that
right.
Into the hard solid. And so what would we call that? We've got a divine working blueprint in the very beginning, comes down to what I would say is our higher self.
Okay, which is part of the working blueprint.
Okay, so it is part of, well, it would have to have part of the working blueprint.
Right.
Because it's now manifesting in a lower dimension, it would have to be part of the working blueprint.
Yes.
And then when it comes down into the physical, that part, I almost see this like a mirror. We are reflecting on this dimension in the hard solid what is coming through all of our experiences. And so when we come down to the hard physical, I believe you used another name for that, didn't you? You didn't call that the divine blueprint at that point, did you?
No.
What did you call it there?
Working blueprint.
The working. Okay. So
working.
It's working. It's the working blueprint because it's in the hard, it's in the dimension of the solids and gases.
Yeah.
And so, in essence, we have perhaps three groupings of this blueprint. And it might need correction between one another. Like you gave this experience or this memory of where through past lives of your own where you had challenged or changed one of those electrical lines.
Right.
So that a person could be walking around with a blueprint where they have made a change from the divine blueprint down to the hard physical.
Actually, if somebody's walking around with a physical dis-ease, it could be, not always, but it can be that what they've done is they've had, like, say, a soldier may have had the same wound in the same place in 10 different lifetimes.
Yes.
Okay, and this time around, he's, say, a Catholic priest, so he's not going to be in danger of having that wound in the same place, but he's got the pain there still.
Yes.
Okay, so basically what he's done is he's sent up a cord, if you want to call it that, to the working blueprint that says there's pain here in this body.
Right.
And then it's sent a cord up to the divine blueprint because there's a repetition of the same kind of wound. And so in the divine blueprint, you'll see the same wound. Well, that's not supposed to be there. God didn't create that. The person in the physical reality created that. So if what you then do is take out the cord that goes from the divine blueprint to the working blueprint from which the physical body is manifested, then if you take that out, that cord that goes up out from the working body, then there's no longer the need for that pain anymore.
You know, that's fascinating stuff.
Isn't it?
No, it, I mean,
it
truly,
is.
This is fascinating stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm understanding this correctly, it's not that you are actually taking that out, but you are witnessing this and asking God to correct it. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really consider myself, I mean, I use the word healer, but basically I'm really a witness to the healing that God does. And God knows what to do, because I would never know when somebody calls me on the phone. I mean, I wouldn't personally be able to say that they have this problem or that problem or the other problem. It's God that says they have this problem, that problem,
mm-hmm.
or the other
mm-hmm.
problem. And this is where we're going to start. And so mm-hmm. I just watch things as they progress, and I ask questions as you do. If there are things that I feel need to be explained to somebody that will help them understand what's being changed and on what level it's being changed,
mm-hmm.
and whether we're going to go back to fetal memory, whether we're going to go back before that, we're going to go to the DNA that the person's carrying, which has their ancestral defects, if you want to call them that, encoded in the genetic code or the DNA. Are you going to go back there, and is that where the heal's going to take place, or is it going to take place at first on a different level completely?
Caroline, that is so fascinating. I mean, truly, I figured when I asked if the divine blueprint was blue, is because I figured it would be blue because it was electrical in nature. And I just associated blue with being electrical. And yes.
Hello, Caroline, can you hear me?
Yes, somewhat. Yes. Can you speak just a tad bit louder?
Yeah. This is a fascinating show.
Oh, I'm so glad you think so, because I just believe it is so fascinating what Caroline is bringing through.
Amen.
Amen.
It's really fascinating.
Well, but, I guess it's because I never stopped asking questions.
Me either. I thought it'd be interesting to talk something on the air, because everybody else is afraid to call in just like me. So
we're glad you called.
I would ask Carolyn, how about arthritis? Has she worked with that?
Caroline,
yeah.
She's asking about arthritis, darling.
Yes, I have worked with several people who have arthritis. As you can tell now from this discussion, working with you would take more than a few minutes on the radio.
Over to KBD. Well, that's all right. Anyway, I just wanted to say I really am enjoying the show anyhow.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And please call me, because I'd be glad to work with you, and we'll go all the way back and find out where you're getting this from, and see if we can't get it straightened out for you.
Do you have Caroline's number?
Yes, I do. I've written it down here.
Now, what is your name, dear?
Betty.
Betty. What she's saying, Betty, is this is something that she can work on, but you can understand, as we're talking about moving from the divine blueprint to the working blueprint, there is a lot of detective work that has to be, that she has to go through, And it's a little difficult to do it on the radio in the short amount of time that we have.
Well, maybe somebody else will get brave enough to call in. I think, I don't know why she isn't going on that cruise.
Well, we don't know. I mean, maybe we can coach her to go along and get some other people to sign up and we all have a party. But Betty,
amen. It sounds really good.
It's marvelous. Now, Betty, give her a call because I know the pain that can be involved with arthritis and, you know, give her an opportunity to work with you. And bless you, dear.
Thank you.
Well, I just want to say I really have enjoyed your show, and I'll let y'all go.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Now, when we get Caroline, can you hear me now, dear?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can.
We have the... I'm hearing this music. I'm wondering if our guys come back with Elvis. Maybe not. Maybe he's just serenading us.
Maybe that's it.
Anyway, so that the Divine Blueprint's blue. We get down to the working blueprint, and I'm assuming that's still blue.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, when we get down to the blueprint where we actually have materialized our physical body in these dense components of gases and solids, is it still blue? The blueprint.
The working blueprint?
Yeah.
Is blue.
So all three blueprints are blue?
No, there are only two blueprints, Carolyn.
Okay.
All right. Unless I've missed one. There's the divine blueprint, there's the working blueprint, and then the body is created from the working blueprint.
Gotcha.
Just like a house was created from a working blueprint.
And that blueprint is very close to the body, like one of the subtle bodies?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's blue also?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought maybe it might have changed color when it got down into the hard components of the gases and solids, that would be electromagnetic in nature. Nobody else might be interested in that, but I kind of see a connection between connecting with the electrical components of the cosmos and then connecting to the electromagnetics of the Earth, and that there might be a change.
I see it as you would see a house blueprint.
Right.
A building blueprint for a house. And I could, and somebody else might see it differently. See, God shows me things in ways that I can perceive and understand.
Yes.
So since I've been working with house plans and condo plans.
Yes.
For years and years, that's how he shows me the blueprint, the working blueprint.
You know, I'm glad you brought this out, Caroline, because there's a lot of people who are in the listening audience, I'm sure, who are starting to see things, because this is the period of time of manifestation when each of us are starting to come into our mastery of our soul abilities. And there might be people out there who are starting to see these things, and they're seeing them in a little different manner.
Right, and that's perfectly fine. God shows you things in a way that you can understand. He doesn't, he wouldn't be showing me the working blueprint in a form I couldn't understand, or I see things down to the soul level of the individual self. And he shows me each individual cell if I need to look at them. And then he'll show me the soul of each cell. So I work from that all the way up through the divine blueprint. So, you know, he shows things like that to me. And I was so excited when I went to hear Bruce Lipton last year at the Science and Consciousness Seminar. He was showing slides of cells, and they're exactly the way I see them. And I've never seen a physiology book or anything that would show me what the cells look like. And I was so excited, I just cried. I sat there with tears running down my face. I thought, oh, I'm actually really seeing the cells just like this.
Isn't confirmation wonderful?
It is. It's wonderful. Just fantastic.
Caroline, we have a half an hour left on the show, and I didn't mean to take you away from that other topic that we were discussing about. I kind of started talking about the blueprint when you were talking about
When I was talking about the divine blueprint to start with.
Well, we were talking about the divine blueprint because we were talking about you were talking about your daughter and how we were tracing. I'm trying to think now what we were tracing, Caroline.
The immune system.
Right. You know,
and
I think this is very important because of autoimmune diseases and so forth. And so you were, you two were talking about, since your daughter does the same work as you do, the two of you were talking about when the immune system became involved in the physical.
Right.
And you were trying to trace that. And this is a fascinating topic, so let's get on to that.
Okay, well, what had happened was my daughter called and told me that her immune system, her autoimmune system, was attacking her thyroid cells. And so when she was working on herself, she went back to the divine blueprint. She couldn't find the autoimmune system. And so she said, you know, I said to God, well, where is the immune system? There doesn't seem to be one here. And he said, there's not one in the divine blueprint. And she said, there's not one in the divine blueprint. And he said, no, you didn't need an immune system when you were created originally. He said, there was no disease in Lemuria that you needed an immune system for. And so she said, how about checking that out, seeing what you see? And sure enough, I couldn't find an immune system in the divine blueprint either. And I was like, wow, interesting that there wasn't one when we were originally created.
And you're taking this original creation back to Lemuria?
Back before that, actually.
That's what I was going to ask you, because I thought we were busy little bees here before Lemuria.
Right, exactly. Back to when the divine blueprint was actually created, we were not created with diseases. We were not created with a need for an immune system. Our divine blueprint was perfectly perfect.
Oh, I love those words, perfectly perfect.
Mm-hmm. It was perfectly perfect. God created it perfectly perfect for each one of us. There were no problems because there wasn't. Why would God have created something that wasn't perfect?
Or wasn't needed.
Right, or something that wasn't needed.
So there was no disease.
Mm-mm. There would have been on that level and on the working blueprint level from which we were created in the physical, there was no need for an immune system even on that level.
Okay, let's ratchet up to Atlantis. Did we have an immune system? Did we need an immune system in Atlantis? Was there a disease then?
God shook his head when I asked him that. So that means to me, no. They didn't have diseases in Atlantis. They didn't have them in Lemuria.
How about the ending of Atlantis when Atlantis started to fall in consciousness? Was this the beginning of disease?
Well, see, this is one of the things that I really am going to work on this week in my meditation time,
mm-hmm.
is trying to find out where an immune system was created. And I'm sure that it would have had to have been created once it was...
once disease was introduced into the human form.
Right.
Can we say that this is going to be our topic for in 2 weeks when we get together?
Well, I certainly hope I will have a lot more of that of information about that.
Because I find this so fascinating.
Oh, so do I. I was just like, wow, you know, God's shown us something here that we had no idea about.
Now, I believe that some of the souls, when Atlantis fell in consciousness and was destroyed and actually fell to the bottom of the ocean, that the souls were dispersed in different areas. And there seemed to have been a large contingent that went to Egypt. And did we need, I don't know if we can get an answer real quick on this, did we need the immune system in Egypt? Now, the very early time in Egypt, when the pharaohs first started, seems to be a different group of people that evolved later. Before the two parts of Egypt were combined into one, there seemed to be a different group of pharaohs, and I'm wondering if it's possible that we can check and find out if the immune system was introduced at that point of time.
God loves for us to have puzzles.
God loves what?
He loves for us to have puzzles to figure out.
Oh, Source is figuring out this puzzle?
No. He likes for us to figure out the puzzle.
Oh, he doesn't want to give us the answer. He wants us to figure it out?
Yes. He just laughed and he said, "You're getting warm."
No. Okay, if God's going to take our temperature, I'd like to move to another part. That brings us down to historically to a period in the Middle East when human beings were taught to gather grain.
Yeah.
The early parts of Egypt had a different grain than wheat. It was perhaps a form of wheat. How do you pronounce that?
I'm not really sure how you pronounce it.
I think it's K-A-M-U-T.
Right. And I'm not sure how you pronounce it.
At any rate, they have found some of this grain in the tombs, and it's similar to our wheat but different. We don't really get into, if I'm historically correct, we don't get into the kind of wheat, or shall we say the family of wheat that we are using now until that period in the Middle East is right around after that high period in Samaria. And is it possible? I hear you with that. I just love it. I know what you're doing, Caroline.
And the point of this is...
huh?
And the point of this is...
that I am thinking that this new... kind of wheat that was introduced to our systems then, is this the basis behind requiring the immune system?
Okay, in other words, did the food that we started eating somehow precipitate disease within the body?
You got it, darling.
Okay. You know, I can't answer that question, and I do think that it probably had something to do with it. I don't really know how extensive that would have been. That's one of those things I was going to
answer. I find this extraordinarily interesting because there are some nutritionists today that believe that the grains, and particularly wheat, is having a problem with the body, and seems to, for some people, have a problem with arthritis, or how should I say, maybe a better way of saying that is seems to aggravate the system.
Oh, I definitely have been told several times when people have diseases that they should not eat wheat. Sprouted wheat apparently is okay for some people, but for some people even sprouted wheat's not okay. But I also get the same, sometimes I get the answer that people should not be eating white sugar.
Well, we kind of, yeah, most people would probably agree with that, that
right.
That sugar fires up the system in such a way that it can fatigue the system between the burning of the sugar, and then it goes down. It's like a back and forth seesawing that we're doing to our whole system.
Right. And Carolyn, this is sort of off the subject, but not really. I was at a conference, a feed conference.
You mean all those little chickens and cows go to the conference to see what things are being developed?
But all the guys that buy the feed for them
I'm just being silly.
And make the feed up at
right.
this conference. And my husband was selling a product to them. So anyway, we were at this feed conference, and we happened to sit down at this table with this lady who owned a mill. And she was explaining to everybody at the table that she'd just gotten this huge contract for one of the major manufacturers of cake mixes and flours and stuff, and I won't say who. But and she was telling them how excited she was and how much she had to add to her milling process and so forth to produce this flour. And she started going down the line of all these different chemical baths that the wheat went through.
Oh, my goodness.
While it was being processed, and I sat there being more and more horrified.
Yeah, we need all those chemical baths, don't we?
I was like, by the time you actually get a grain of flour in a bag, it probably is no longer flour but is chemical because you've washed it so many times in chlorine. Excuse me? What's up with that? I thought, if people are eating this and making bread out of it, I had gone off of wheat probably 2 years before that. And so I knew there were problems with it, but I was kind of like you. I was thinking there was a problem in terms of how our bodies metabolize it.
Right. And
maybe
it's just chemicals.
I wasn't thinking about the process is no longer take it down to the old flour mill and put the wheat grain down in there and grind it up and put it in a bag and send it home. I thought it was never meant to be this way.
No, it wasn't, and I'll give you a little historical perspective on that, Caroline, because I think this is very fascinating. When our civilization discovered Pompeii underneath all of the ashes, they found bodies. To me, this is so fantastic to actually think that we can have somebody from several thousand years ago be preserved in ash, and they are actually able to do an autopsy on the body and find out the state of their health, the teeth and the bones and so forth. And there were soldiers who were trying to get away from Pompeii. They were out there on the beach, and this is some of the work that they did with these particular group of bodies. And they found that the kind of diet that they had, that they were in marvelous health, teeth-wise, bone-wise, and the soldiers, one of their staples that they used was wheat, except, the men took, the soldiers took their wheat grinders with them out in the field, and they would literally cut down the wheat, and they would take the grain right there, no chemicals, no processing of any sort, and they would grind it. This was a major portion of their diet, and it apparently produced a very healthy body. And so this whole thing fascinates me, Caroline. If you could do some meditating on that week, over the next 2 weeks, I'm going to do some readings myself and see if we can get behind this concept of what happened to the foods that we needed an immune system. I just think this would be utterly fascinating.
Oh, I do too. That would be really interesting because of the fact that we can also say, and guess what, folks?
We do know this, that the body, and I've gotten this from readings of myself, where chemicals are concerned, especially where it introduces hormones into the system, that
it
causes great havoc in the body because some of these chemicals and hormones duplicate what the natural hormone is doing, and it throws the body completely out of kilter.
Yes, I'm sure it does.
And we know that they're feeding chickens a lot of hormones, and no turkey comes off of the farm without hormones because it is an antibiotics, because it's a natural part of the farming process, or else they would be sick.
Right.
So even though we say, well, chicken and beef chicken and
turkey
is a whole lot better than beef. That might be because it's not the heavy heavy meat that beef is, but it still has a lot of the chemicals in it.
Yes, it does.
And so you and I have a little bit of homework.
Yes, we do.
And all of you who are out there listening have to listen back to us in 2 weeks and get some of this information, and hopefully by then you'll have a little bit of courage to call in and join the fun.
Yeah. I have only had one caller today, and that's kind of disappointing. Maybe we're not talking about things that they feel they need to ask questions about, or maybe they are just, dumbstruck by our conversation. I don't know.
I don't know either. I feel like what we're bringing to the table today is really some interesting information. I mean, we've talked all about the different diseases, how you go back and change the blueprint. The kinds of processes that we're talking about and how diseases finally show up in the body, and what God does with these is just so fascinating.
Yes, it is.
We don't have much time. We probably have another 5 minutes, Caroline, and there's two questions that I wanted to discuss. It kind of goes back to this E. coli in the spinach.
Right.
And one of the things that I wanted to mention was colloidal silver.
That would be a very good thing to be drinking if you've been eating spinach recently.
Well, some people take a little bit of colloidal silver every day, and before we start talking about it, I kind of want to just give a little thought about what it is. It basically is a tiny little silver bar that's put in water, and an electrical current is run through there, and so very minute particles of silver is then suspended in the solution of water, and these tiny little particles of silver, Caroline, have you seen them work in the body?
Yes, I have, and I've seen colloidal silver work very well for infections, and those are caused by bacteria generally, but I'm not sure I think you should be drinking it every day. I'm more inclined because what's usually happened to me when I've had an infection and have taken colloidal silver, God said, now, don't buy anymore. Stay off of it. It does. You don't need to have it in your system all the time, because it will work better on the same kind of theory that antibiotics work if you just take it when you need it. you don't need it all the time. Your body has bacteria in it that is good for it and that needs to be in there because that bacteria works. And, of course, you can get that from eating any kind of yogurt that you know has active cultures in it. You can get plenty of bacteria, good bacteria for your whole system that way. So,
well, we know that it's a good tool.
Mm-hmm,
and so what would be your advice as to how to use it? It seems to offer some benefit for bacteria and viruses. When might a person feel that it's necessary or advisable to take some?
Well, I think if you've got an infection, you know, if you've got a cut that's gotten infected or if you've got a sinus infection or something like that, I know several people who have used it as a nasal spray, and it seems to have worked very well to clean out their sinuses or keep the little bit of infection becoming a lot of infection. And then, you know, I pour it on any cut or wound I get. I also pour Noni on them. And I drink it if I have an infection somewhere. I just pour, I don't know, probably 2-3 tablespoons of colloidal silver in the water that I drink. And so that I know I'm getting it when I've got a place where I've gotten some infection. But I do think it helps with that. And the other thing that really helps with any kind of infection is Noni.
You know, that was the next thing. When you said Noni, that fascinated me because I've never heard of using Noni for infection.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
Now, let's talk a little bit about Noni. We probably have 2 or 3 minutes, Caroline. But before we get into Noni, give your phone number one more time because I want people to be able, all those people who had problems that didn't call in for a free reading, give them your telephone number so they can call you and get something in depth.
Okay. My phone number is 540-586-2401.
And my site for Akashic reading is Akashic, akashic-reading.com. And in the 2 minutes that we have, my dear, let's talk about Noni. I just love it.
Oh, I love Noni. And, you know, I think you have to sort of pick and choose the kinds of things you're going to use. But Noni is a fruit that grows in the Polynesian Islands, one of which, of course, is Hawaii. And they make it in capsule form, in powdered form, and also in a liquid form. I keep capsules and liquid in the refrigerator all the time. And anytime I have a cut or anything like that that's an open wound, I pour Noni on it. Or maybe not, you know, dependent on where it is. I may put some Noni on a cotton ball and put it on there. But Noni is a wonderful antibiotic. And
I never knew it was an antibiotic. I heard of it for high blood pressure.
Oh, it's good for there are so many things it's good for. It's just really pretty amazing stuff. It's very good for external wounds of any kind, no matter how big they are or how small they are. If you pour it over, say, a wound that you had that you might think you might need stitches for,
mm-hmm.
The whole wound will completely be cleared out, and you just keep pouring it over and pouring it over. Do it 2 or 3 times a day, or sometimes 4 or 5 times a day if I've gotten a bad cut or something, which I haven't gotten in years, but I've done it with my grandchildren. I pour Noni on their cuts and bruises and scrapes. If you'll keep pouring it on there every day or putting it on there every day, the skin will just completely reheal and you'll never have a scar even.
Well, what a wonderful tip to the people out there, and I learned something from that myself. I mean, I use Noni, but I didn't realize that, yes, we've got somebody, I don't know. Anyway, Caroline,
yeah,
we thank you, darling, for coming today.
Thank you for being there and for inviting me. Okay.
And we have some interesting homework for next week.
Yes, we do.
I mean, I'm really fascinated by that one.
I am too.
So we'll come forth in 2 weeks with all of our wonderful information about the immune system. And to each of you out there, I send my love to you. And this is a magnificent journey, and may we all have fun.